All right, so let's dive into this case, McIntyre v. Ballantyne. It's a big one in Tennessee, and it all revolves around this idea. Imagine you're in an accident,
Okay.
but you're a little bit at fault. Should you get absolutely nothing,
Right.
even if the other person was way more responsible?
Yeah, you're getting at the heart of it, the whole fairness question.
Exactly. So this is how it used to be in Tennessee before this McIntyre v. Ballantyne case came along.
It really shook things up, a landmark decision still impacting legal strategy even today.
So paint us a picture. What happened?
Well, it all starts on a Tennessee highway,
Okay.
November 2nd, 1986.
Right.
Two guys, Harry McIntyre and Clifford Ballantyne, get into a collision.
Sounds pretty straightforward so far. A typical accident case.
You'd think so, but there's a twist. Both drivers, they'd been drinking.
Okay. So that complicates
It
things.
does, especially back then.
Why is that?
Well, Tennessee had this rule, contributory negligence. Basically, even 1% at fault, you were barred from any compensation for your injuries. Seriously, 1%. That's harsh.
It was an all or nothing system. Didn't matter how badly the other party messed up.
That seems pretty rough. Like, imagine you bake a cake and you forget one tiny ingredient.
Yeah.
The cake might not be perfect, but is it ruined? Do you deserve no credit? It just seems out of proportion.
That's a great analogy. That's how contributory negligence felt for a lot of people. And in this case, the jury found McIntyre and Ballantyne equally at fault, 50-50.
Oh, wow. So right down the middle.
And because of that strict rule, McIntyre, even though he was seriously hurt, got nothing.
So this wasn't just about who hit who,
No.
it was about this bigger issue.
Exactly. A challenge to the very foundation of how fault was determined in Tennessee.
So this case starts to climb the legal ladder
Right.
from the initial trial all the
Yeah.
way up.
Up to the Tennessee Supreme Court.
In the lower courts, they stuck with the old rule.
Yeah, they did initially. They upheld that contributory negligence standard.
Up the Supreme Court. That's where things get really interesting. They decided it was time for a change.
Okay, so the Supreme Court steps in and says, we need to rethink this whole thing.
Exactly. They knew they had to address this issue head on.
So what did they do? Did they just get rid of contributory negligence completely?
Well, they did abandon it, but they didn't go to the other extreme either.
What do you mean?
They didn't adopt a pure comparative fault system, you know, where even if you were 99% at fault, you could still get 1% of the damages.
Oh, I see. So they wanted to find some kind of middle ground.
And that's exactly what they did. They landed on what's called modified comparative fault.
And what is that exactly?
Well, it's sometimes called the 49% rule.
Okay, the 49% rule. Lay it on us. What does that actually mean?
Well, it means that if you're less than 50% at fault for an accident, you can still recover damages.
Oh, okay, so there's still a chance to get something.
Yeah, but there's a cat, your damages are reduced
Reduced how?
based on your percentage of fault.
Give us an example.
Okay, so let's say you're 20% at fault.
You could get 80% of the damages.
So it's not all or nothing anymore.
Right, it's a much fairer approach. Like, hey, you made a mistake, but the other person was mostly responsible.
You still deserve some compensation, right?
Yeah, and it moves away from this black and white, all or nothing view of fault toward a more nuanced approach.
Makes sense. But wait, I thought there was more to McIntyre v. Ballantyne. What about situations where there are multiple people at fault?
You're right, that's a key part of this case, too.
Yeah.
And it all ties into this idea of fairness that we've been talking about.
So let's dig into that. What happens when you've got like a multi-car pileup situation? More than just two people involved.
Well, before McIntyre, Tennessee had this thing called joint and several liability.
Okay, joint and several liability. What's that all about?
Imagine this. Multiple people cause an accident, each with different levels of fault. Before McIntyre, the injured person could go after any of them
Any of
for
you.
the full amount of damages.
Hold on. Even if one person was only a little bit responsible,
Yep.
even if they were only, say, 10% at fault.
That seems, well, a little off balance, to be honest.
It could lead to some pretty unfair outcomes, especially if one person had more money than the other's deeper pockets, so to speak.
Yeah, you can see how that could be a problem. So did McIntyre change that too?
It did. With the shift to modified comparative fault, the court also reformed this aspect. Now each person pays only their share.
Okay, so if three people cause an accident and one is 20% at fault, another 30%, the last one 50%, they each pay those percentages.
Precisely. Like splitting a bill at a restaurant, you only pay for what you ordered.
Right. That makes a lot more sense. But hold on, there's one more piece to this puzzle, right? Something about intoxication evidence.
You've got a sharp memory. Yes, McIntyre v. Ballantyne also clarified that if your blood alcohol content is above the legal limit, that creates a presumption that you were intoxicated.
Okay.
And that can be used as evidence.
In civil cases.
Exactly, like in this case.
So does that automatically mean you're negligent?
Not automatic.
Okay.
It's not a slam dunk, but it creates a presumption that the jury can weigh.
They can consider it along with all the other evidence.
Exactly. It adds another dimension to this whole question of fault, doesn't it?
So it's not a simple you drank, you're guilty situation.
No, it's much more nuanced than that. And that's one of the things that makes McIntyre v. Ballantyne so fascinating.
So we've got this major shift from contributory negligence to the 49% rule. Changes to how multiple people share the blame, and this clarification on using evidence of intoxication.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot to unpack from just one case.
It really is. And remember, we're just scratching the surface here.
It sounds like McIntyre v. Ballantyne really was a game changer.
It absolutely was.
But what was the logic behind all these changes? What was going through the minds of the judges when they made these decisions? And what about the long-term impact? How did this case really change things on the ground? You know, for lawyers and for the people involved in accidents?
Great questions. It's clear we need to go deeper. Well, if we're going deeper, let's start with why they decided to ditch contributory negligence. You know, what was their reasoning?
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Why such a big change?
The court basically said it was just outdated.
Mm-hmm.
Unfair, especially in cases where someone's negligence was pretty minor compared to the other party.
It does seem harsh to completely deny someone any compensation just because they messed up a little bit, especially when you compare it to how reckless the other person might have been.
That was their thinking. And the court pointed out that most other states had already moved on from this strict contributory negligence standard.
Oh, interesting. So Tennessee was kind of behind the times on this.
In a way, yeah. They were becoming an outlier, holding on to this old system that didn't really reflect how most people thought about fairness anymore.
So it sounds like they were trying to catch up, get Tennessee law in line with the rest of the country.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. They recognized that legal thinking had evolved and Tennessee needed to adapt.
But they didn't go all the way to a pure comparative fault system, right?
Right.
Where even if you were 99% at fault, you could still get something. Why not?
Well, they were worried about encouraging reckless behavior.
I see. So it's like a balance.
Exactly. They wanted to find a system where people were still held accountable for their actions, but they could still get some compensation if they were mostly in the right, you know?
So you're saying that 49% rule is kind of like a compromise?
I think that's a good way to put it. It's a balance between fairness for the victim and some responsibility for everyone involved.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about joint and several liability? How did that fit into all of this?
Well, the court basically said that joint and several liability just didn't make sense anymore.
Once they switched to modified comparative fault.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you're dividing up fault based on percentages, it makes sense to divide up the liability the same way.
Right. So under the new system, no more targeting the person with the deepest pockets and making them pay for everyone else's mistakes.
That's right.
Each defendant is only responsible for their portion.
Exactly. Which aligns much more closely with this idea of individual responsibility.
Right. So it sounds like the whole system became more balanced and, well, fairer after McIntyre v. Ballantyne. But I have to ask, what about that whole thing with the intoxication evidence? Wasn't that a bit controversial?
Oh, absolutely. It definitely sparked debate.
Because it's taking something from criminal law and using it in a civil case, right?
Right. Critics were worried about blurring the lines between criminal and civil law, and they thought it might unfairly sway juries against defendants.
So how did the court justify bringing this presumption of intoxication into a civil case?
Well, they said that even though it comes from criminal law, it's still relevant when you're trying to figure out if someone was negligent. And remember, negligence is about acting reasonably.
Okay.
And if you're driving under the influence, you're clearly not being reasonable.
So it's not like a guaranteed win for the plaintiff just because the defendant had a few drinks.
Exactly. It's just one piece of evidence that the jury can consider along with everything else.
Right, right. So it's not black and white.
Exactly. The court was trying to make sure juries had all the information they needed while still making sure defendants' rights were protected. It's a delicate balance.
So to sum up, we've got the switch from contributory negligence to this 49% rule, the changes to how responsibility is shared when multiple people are involved, and then this clarification about using evidence of intoxication.
You got it.
It's clear that McIntyre v. Ballantyne was a huge turning point for the law in Tennessee.
Absolutely.
But what about the ripple effects? Like, how did it actually change the way lawyers work?
Yeah.
And how did it affect the people involved in these accidents?
Well, for lawyers, it completely changed their strategies.
Oh, so.
They had to rethink how they approached settlements, how they argued cases before a jury, and how they advised their clients.
So a lot of things to consider.
Yeah. With the 49% rule, even if your client was partially to blame, they might still have a legitimate case.
That's interesting.
And the end of joint and several liability meant you couldn't just zero in on the defendant with the deepest pockets, you know. You had to prove each person's individual level of responsibility.
I could see how that would make things more complex. But what about for the people who were actually in these accidents? Did these changes make things better for them?
I'd say so, yeah.
How?
Well, for people who were injured, it really evened things out.
Okay.
I mean, as long as they were less than 50% at fault, they could get at least some compensation.
So a lot of people who might have been completely shut out under the old system now had a chance.
Exactly. A chance to get some justice.
So it sounds like overall, McIntyre v. Ballantyne really did make the system fairer, especially for the people who were injured.
I think that's a fair assessment.
But I imagine not everyone was happy with these changes, right? Were there any criticisms or concerns about what this case would lead to?
Of course. Anytime you have a big legal shift like this, there are going to be people who push back.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Some people were worried about more lawsuits, you know, or that people wouldn't feel as responsible for their actions anymore.
Ah, so they felt like the scales had tipped too far in favor of the people making the claims.
That was their perspective, like the pendulum had swung too far in the other direction.
It's like anything, you're always trying to find that right balance.
Exactly. But even with those criticisms, I think it's safe to say McIntyre v. Ballantyne had a positive impact on the law in Tennessee.
I think that's a fair assessment. It sounds like it brought Tennessee law into the modern era, right?
Absolutely. It's a landmark case, no question about it. And it continues to shape how personal injury law works in the state today.
So, to wrap things up, we've covered the details of the case, the changes it brought about, the reasons behind those changes, and then the lasting impact on the law in Tennessee. Anything else we should touch on before we move on?
I think we've hit the main points, but you know, one thing that's really worth emphasizing is that McIntyre v. Ballantyne is a great example of how the law adapts. It's not static. Courts can step in and reshape the legal landscape when it's needed.
So it's not just about this one specific case.
Right.
It's about how the law can evolve and stay relevant.
Exactly. You know, it shows that courts can try to make things fairer and reflect our changing understanding of justice.
That's a really good point. It reminds us that the law isn't just some rigid set of rules. It's constantly being reinterpreted and adapted.
It's a living, breathing thing. And cases like McIntyre v. Ballantyne play a crucial role in shaping how it evolves.
Well said. So, for all our listeners out there, whether you're a lawyer, a law student, or just someone who's interested in how the legal system works, we hope this deep dive into McIntyre v. Ballantyne has given you a better understanding of this landmark case and its legacy.
You know, it's a case that every lawyer in Tennessee needs to understand.
Because the ideas in this case, they're everywhere now, right?
They're woven into the fabric of the legal system. It's not just about car accidents or drunk driving anymore.
Right. It's about this bigger idea of negligence and how fault and responsibility are determined.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important.
So we've talked about how this case brought Tennessee law into the modern era. We've talked about how it shifted things towards a more balanced approach to fault and liability. And we've talked about how this case is still making waves in courtrooms across the state.
It's a fascinating case.
It really is. It's a case that changed the game in Tennessee, and it's a great example of how the law can adapt to changing times. So with that, I think we're ready to move on to something else.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground here.
But there's always more to explore.
Always.
So we hope you'll join us next time for another deep dive into the legal world.
See you then.
So wait, are you saying that this whole McIntyre case, it's not just about, you know, DUIs and car crashes?
No, not at all.
It goes beyond that.
It really does. This case had a huge impact on all sorts of negligence cases in Tennessee. Think medical malpractice.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Product liability, even those slip and fall cases you hear about.
So this wasn't just some minor tweak to the law then. It sounds like McIntyre v. Ballantyne laid down a whole new foundation for how Tennessee deals with negligence, period.
You got it. It's a case that every lawyer in Tennessee, no matter what they specialize in, really needs to understand.
Because the ideas from McIntyre, they're everywhere now.
Yeah, they're woven into the very fabric of the state's legal system. It's a landmark decision, that's for sure.
Okay, so we've covered the facts of the case, the big changes it made, the reasoning behind those changes, and then the long-term impact, you know, how things actually played out. Anything else we should touch on before we wrap things up?
I think we've hit the key points, but it's worth repeating. McIntyre v. Ballantyne shows how the law can adapt. It's a perfect example.
It's not stuck in the past. It can change with the times.
Exactly. It shows that courts have the power to step in, reshape things when the legal landscape needs to be updated, you know?
To better reflect our ideas about what's fair, right?
Exactly. And what justice means.
It's a good reminder that the law isn't just a bunch of rules written down somewhere. It's constantly being reinterpreted, reexamined.
It's a living, breathing thing, for sure. And cases like McIntyre, they're the ones that really shape how the law evolves.
Well said. So to all our listeners out there, lawyers, law students, anyone who's interested in the legal system, we hope this deep dive into McIntyre v. Ballantyne has given you a better grasp of this case and its legacy. How it continues to affect things.
It's a case that every lawyer in Tennessee, you know, no matter what kind of law they practice, should be familiar with.
Because it goes way beyond just car accidents or drunk driving or any of that, right?
Absolutely.
It's about negligence. Like, how do we decide who's at fault and who's responsible when something goes wrong? It affects so many different areas of the law.
It really does. It's much bigger than just that initial car crash.
So we've talked about how this case really brought Tennessee law into the modern era. We talked about how it shifted things, moved towards a more balanced approach when it comes to fault and liability, and we've seen how it's still having an impact in courts across the state.
It's had a lasting impact, for sure.
It's a fascinating case, a real game changer, and a great example of how the law can adapt to a changing world. So thanks for joining us on this deep dive into McIntyre v. Ballantyne. We hope you found it informative.
And maybe even a little bit thought-provoking.
We'll see you next time for another deep dive into the legal world.
Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.